Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Utterly Unscripted. On today's episode, I am speaking to a man who's on a mission to rid the world of junk. It's junk news, junk information, junk perception. You name it, it's junk, and he's getting rid of it. He's the founder and CEO of Otherweb, a platform that's revolutionizing the way that we consume content. No paywalls, no clickbait, no ads, no auto-playing videos, and no affiliate links or other junk. And I have to say, I have tried it out. I actually really like it because there's one thing that annoys me more. It's all the paywalls that you want to read a news story that comes up and, oh yes, you can read this story for $5 a week and pay 10 weeks in advance. It's not fair. It's not just about creating a better platform. It's about creating a better world. Alex has spent 15 years of his life developing perception systems, but at some point he realized that the world doesn't need more cameras. What it needs is to make sense. So why are we so bad at it? These are questions that I want to ask Alex. Why are we getting worse at it? What will happen if things keep getting worse? These are the questions that have led Alex on a quest to rid the world of junk. Let's face it, you can't make sense of junk. You can't make good decisions based on junk. And you can't extract useful information from a streaming heap of junk without spending a lot of time and effort sorting through to figure out what is the truth. So we're joining Alex on his monumental task in ridding the world of junk, because if we don't, we'll be drowning in a sea of what is called fake news, fake information. It's all senseless. We won't be able to navigate the murky waters of our own perception. So please help me welcome to the show, Alex Fink. He's a man on a mission. Alex, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us. I'm really pleased that you're here. And I had never heard of Otherweb before, so I'm hoping that there are other people who are going to do exactly what I did and go check it out, because it's an awesome platform.
Thank you. That's the goal. We're at around 280,000 people right now, but it's doubling every few weeks. So the goal is eventually to try to reach at least 10 to 20% of the population, right? I don't think that the way we are structured right now, we can appeal to your average TikTok user. But I hope that everybody who cares what they put into their brain is a future customer.
Let's face it. We've talked about this now a few times. I don't know if I talked about it in an episode that you've listened to, but TikTok is a new thing. I mean, now I can't keep saying that it's new for me, because I've been doing it now for a few months, getting on there and having a look. But if there's one place that you can go to be bombarded with junk, it's TikTok.
Well, unfortunately, I think the rest of the web is quickly catching up. And especially now that generating content is becoming way easier, because ChatGPT can do it for you. You just need to do some light editing at the end. We're going to see an acceleration of this trend. So the guy who was writing 50 clickbait articles a day for BuzzFeed before, now we can write 500. With about the same amount of effort. So
I've talked about that with a previous guest. Yeah, for sure. I agree. I've talked about that with a previous guest, where this new AI thing has come out. And so since I had that conversation, that was with Noah Healy, and he's going to come back on the show and talk with us about AI. But in the meantime, I've been doing my own little bits of research and trying to make sense of it. I have subscribed to actually something I found through Otherweb, which helps you to use ChatGPT in a more effective way. Because when I very first opened it and started asking, you know, stupid questions, I'm someone who's not a technical mind. I don't understand the tech stuff. So for me, I just wanted to ask stuff and see what it would spit out and see how accurate it was. But I can definitely see the potential now. And even from the perspective of the podcast, you know, I spend a lot of time trying to get things from my brain out onto my fingers and onto the computer to write stuff. Like, you know, I looked at your bio and I'm like, oh my God, like, I just don't have time to do this. How can I write something that's effective? I have to say, though, that I'm not 100% happy with the ChatGPT output.
Well, and I don't know if it's just because.
Right. Okay. I'm not sure if it's because I'm stupid. I'm not stupid, but I'm stupid when it comes to AI. Like, I don't understand it 100%. that maybe I'm not giving it the right commands to do that, to give me the good information. But I guess it's a work in progress. It's something that I'm working on. But I have joined other web because, you know, I am someone who frequents social media. So I see a lot of news stories pop up every single time. If it's from one of the huge media outlets, you know, Fox, I don't look at Fox News often, but, you know, even New York Times, you know, if you don't, I do subscribe to New York Times, but if you don't, you are constantly hit by paywalls. And that seems to come from everywhere, even the ones that are not for profit.
Yeah, so we are consciously avoiding any website with paywalls on it. The good news is that for every type of news, there's usually some outlets that have a paywall and some that don't. And so I think the most difficult type of news to get without paywalls is business news or finance. But even there, okay, Forbes is paywalled, The Economist is paywalled, but CNBC is not. And so maybe your choice is limited, but you go to where you can read it without paywalls. And in our case, our crawler can get through the paywall pretty easy. We can get all the articles, but we respect the wishes of the publisher. So if they put a paywall there, that's a signal for us that says we don't like to share. Okay, if you don't, then we're not going to sample from you.
Yeah. But then, you know, you say that. I have found too in my, I'm studying law and I've had to go looking for certain things online. And so in Australia, we have Murdoch Media owned outlets. So of course they own Fox and Disney and all of that. So they are renowned for paywall. You can't get any of their stories, but actually you can't even get any of their stories that are 20 years old without going through a paywall. So what was it that made you decide that you were going to come up with this? Like, yeah, I've got a couple of questions. They're all coming at once. So for like, is that what started you off thinking that you were going to do this? Like, is that the kind of junk that you're talking about? Or is it more like the fake news?
Yeah, it's false information. Not the paywalls that triggered me in a sense. Mm-hmm. So the idea that I've been running around with for the past decade, at least, is that for some reason throughout my lifetime, and I'm an information junkie, I've been reading a lot of stuff my entire life. Throughout my lifetime, it seems like the quality of information has been getting worse and worse. It's not the paywalls that are making it worse, but something else. And so I've been thinking what that might be. And it seems to me like the cleanest, most logical hypothesis is that if you monetize content using advertising and advertising pays per click or per view, over time, all content will get optimized to maximize clicks and views. There's no paper quality or paper truth. Right, those things aren't measured, or at least even if they are measured, they are not reflected in the payout formula in any way. And so our goal was, well, first of all, give people the tools to evaluate what they're reading, the quality of the content, right? And then once we do that, help them filter out the bad stuff, because not only will that help the users, but it will change the incentives for the creators of content. Junk will no longer pay if a large percentage of users filters it out.
And so
the kind of junk that we were going after and we still are is mostly the clickbaity stuff, right? I would say fake news is another version of junk that we want to filter out. But we start from the really easy things, right? When CNN publishes an article titled "Stop What You're Doing and Watch This Elephant Play with Bubbles," that's an actual CNN article. So we start by filtering that out.
Is that clickbait?
Obviously, that's clickbait. Otherwise,
that's what they—that's what they call clickbait, right? Okay.
Well, so the technical definition that we use for clickbait is an article where the headline doesn't quite match the body.
It doesn't match what the story is,
and the headline uses language that is meant to attract attention, right? I'm using examples of things that, in my worldview, should not exist, right? I'll give you another one. Forbes has an article ranking protein powders. They have the top 10 best protein powders for you to buy right now. And if you search for best protein powder on Google, it is the second result that you see. The first one is from Life Science. Neither one of these should have a say or an opinion about protein powders, as far as I know, right? Mm. But they do. Why? Because they rank high on Google. They are trying to monetize it to get more clicks, right? So entire ecosystem is broken. And we're trying to just bring some tools into the world that will let people decide what it is that they want to put into their brain, right? When you go into a supermarket, you can pick up any packaged good and see the nutrition label on, right?
Yeah.
Well, why isn't there one for information? So our first product was a nutrition label. It wasn't the other web. We actually made a Chrome extension called ValueRank that just created the nutrition label for whatever article you happen to be reading in your browser.
Okay.
And then people liked it, but they told us, like, that's an extra click. Why don't you just make a client so I can read the article through something that has that nutrition label built in? That's why the other web happened.
Well, so you build your, from my very limited experience using other web, you build your own. So basically you are curating your own menu of information, really. Because when you first sign up, it does ask you to sort of rank what, on a sliding scale, what you would like to be looking at. So, and it's now I need to form the habit of going there and using it regularly. So that's my stage. But I don't like looking at a lot of political stuff. So I could scroll that slider bar all the way down to the minimum. Whereas, you know, I could put travel news a little higher because I enjoy looking at that stuff, or I, you know, whatever it is. I probably need to play with my settings a little bit because I don't know exactly.
I want to give you a few notes on that. So first of all, what you just said, move the slider down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The reality is you're actually moving it up.
Oh, okay.
Because essentially there's a trade-off between quality and quantity. If you rank all the articles on the quality scale from 0 to 100, right, what that bar asks you to do is to set your threshold. So when you're asking it for less articles, you're just putting the bar really high for the articles that do make it through into your feed.
Oh, okay. Right?
You're getting the best ones because you want to read only a few. Now, the other thing worth noting is in that onboarding, we just give you 8 categories and we ask you which one you want, right? But what we do later on, especially if you use the mobile app and not the website doesn't do it that well yet, is we're learning as you interact with the articles, what topics interest you. And we're not interested in what TikTok and YouTube do, which is, did you react to it quickly, right? What they measure with a like or with a share, right? We don't measure any of that stuff. We actually ask you to tell us, is this interesting or is this boring, right? Because then instead of measuring your outrage or your agitation, we get to actually understand what topics interest you and show you more of that. And so we're already doing that customization in the app. And the next release, which I expect to be next week, will actually show you everything that we measured about your interests and let you adjust it manually if you want to. So there's a little over 200 topics that we've classified or that we've clustered articles into right now. We measure your affinity to each topic, but then you can look at it and disagree. So if we decide that you really like electric cars, and you look at it and decide, nope, I didn't. I just clicked on 3 Musk articles randomly. Right?
Yeah.
You got it wrong. Here's what I actually like.
Right. So it's actually then taking that curating to a whole nother level. That's a whole new level. And Alex, that is just on the mobile app, is it? Or will that be across the board?
It will be. It's just we're rolling things out first on the app right now. Actually, the app already has a different UI. The website will catch up at some point, and then the app will have this advanced customization. The website will catch up a few weeks later, probably. We can't develop everything everywhere at once because we're still bootstrapped. Yeah. So at this point, personally, I've become addicted to my own app, which is saying something, right? And so I always want all the new features to appear there first.
First, right. And so that is in the app stores, or do they... How do people download the app?
Because I will download it. App Store and Google Play. It's called OtherWeb.
OtherWeb. Okay. That's easy. I'm going to go and download it because I do use my phone quite a bit. And more than likely, I will develop that habit of using it more if it is on my phone rather than remembering to open yet another tab. And I talked about this on another podcast that I'm on. We counted that I had something like 170 odd tabs open in yeah, I know. There's something wrong with me. I don't like notifications.
I know several people like you in this regard, so you're not alone.
But you know what? They all have a use. It's not like I just decide to open a new tab and just go off on another tangent. You know, I've got things for, you know, assignments that I'm researching, or I've got Google Docs that are open, or I'm looking at something else. I think I had a couple of recipes open that I thought, oh, I'm going to try that this week, you know, for some new smoothies for my weight loss and stuff. So they all have a purpose, and when they're finished with, I close them. But I think it gave my friend a little bit of anxiety to know that I had that many tabs that were sitting there open on my screen.
Yeah, I wonder how you navigate between them. It seems like the only way it will work is if it's completely sequential, right?
Yeah, it's not. I pretty much have to just sort of, I just have to sort of hover my mouse over and go, oh, that's what that was. Okay, yeah. My computer, actually, it was Noah who told me I shouldn't do that because it slows my computer down. It's a MacBook Pro, but it's having some issues now because I have so many tabs open, and it's so many tabs over a few different kinds of windows. And particularly because I use Google Chrome, that's apparently quite heavy, and I need to rethink
the
usage.
Not just that it's heavy. I think Chrome was the first one to actually start a new process for each tab. So it treats each tab as if there's a new piece of software running, right?
Yeah,
so
when
you have 170 tabs, that's actually 170 processes that your computer needs to context switch between. But you'd still have, in whatever browser you use, you would still have the problem of overloading memory.
Overloading.
Every one of these pages just loaded a bunch of images and videos that start autoplaying because the internet is full of junk.
Yes. So let's talk about that, actually, because autoplaying is, I have to say, I know that there are people who like that. I do not like that. It is one of the things that sets me off on a little bit of an internal rage, that a video is assuming that I want to watch it. I am the kind of person who would prefer to read the news story rather than watching the video. And there are quite a few so my personal experience has been, if I've been researching a murder case or something like that, and I've had to go to a news website to read the story, they will have a video attached that will automatically start playing. And as you scroll, it zips it down into the corner of your screen. It doesn't give you the choice to not have that. So I installed a blocker on my... it's an extension that I installed to stop those things from happening. Now they don't even load unless I specifically click on them. But why do they exist? Why do those videos exist?
So it's an arms race. I think the reality is the vast majority of people don't like them. In fact, the vast majority of websites that employ that tactic don't like them either. But they feel like if they don't put that video, then they are at a disadvantage vis-a-vis the websites that do, right? So it's one of these things that somebody did it once, and even though he probably thought it was annoying too, he suddenly saw the engagement numbers are better, right? News leaked throughout the internet. If you put an autoplaying video in your page, the engagement numbers will be better. People click on more ads, people scroll down farther, right? And over time, everybody starts doing it. I think most of the bad stuff we see on the internet happens in the same way, right? We mentioned TikTok before. TikTok, at this point, I think the average person spends an hour and a half per day, right? We've seen this time on site or time in app grow from like a few minutes for most of the early websites to 20 minutes during the early days of Facebook. It kept creeping up because there's an arms race. Everybody has to keep people on their website longer than the other guy can keep those things.
Right. Yeah.
And now we're at an hour and a half, which is obviously not good for anyone.
That's a huge number, actually, as an average.
That's what I saw. I've never used TikTok, so I don't actually know how that's even possible.
I can say that it's possible. Like, you do tend to fall down a rabbit hole, and you do get I've talked about this with many, many people before, that the videos that I see are all animals. So it's all funny videos of animals doing stupid things or really sweet animals doing lovely things. But it's very animal centric. And I guess I've just taught the algorithm to deliver those videos just to me.
Your feed, somebody else might have all dancing. Somebody might have all neo-Nazis. I don't know.
Which completely infuriates me, you know, like seeing the dancing when you get the people that come on. And I've seen them before, of course, but I flick through them very quickly. So I guess I'm teaching the app that I don't want to see the same dance routines over and over again. And also it gets monotonous listening to that same, just that little 30-second clip of music. Yeah. It's enough to make me want to sort of, you know, lob my ears right off my head. So,
But going back to the original thing, right? So these arms races, they exist all the time. And it's really hard to break that cycle without somebody stepping in from the outside, right? In our case, if we eliminate a lot of playing videos, which we did, then obviously we're missing out on the kind of time on site that we could have gotten using somebody else's tactics, right? But we've gone all the way to the other opposite, which you mentioned during the onboarding. It probably asked you, how many articles do you read per day, right? And when you get to that number of articles, we usually throw a congratulations screen. You're already well informed. You can stop now, right?
All right. Because
you can keep going if you want, but we want to give you that cue that this was your goal. You wanted to read 50 articles per day, right?
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to read more, or do you have something better to do with your life? Go read Shakespeare. Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my general approach, right? I think everything is, I wouldn't say everything is good in moderation. Some things are bad, right? But even the things that are good only in moderation. Crazy example. There was a study that I saw recently from 2013 or so, where researchers compared people who were actually at the marathon bombing in Boston in 2013. Mm-hmm. To people who watched 6 hours of news coverage or more of the bombing. The people who watched 6 hours or more were more likely to have PTSD than people who were at the bombing.
Really?
So, yep. So news, probably good for you. 6 hours of news, probably not good for you.
And it's the kind of news, I guess, that you're watching. If you're just going to like, if you are just consuming every single piece of news about one particular news story, you know, you mentioned about the counting of articles. I'm going to have to check that on my other web because I don't know if I paid attention to that. The Guardian also counts how many articles you've read in the previous year, like over the previous year. And I try to average around 2 articles from The Guardian every day. Sometimes I will read more, but I did just get an email from them the other day to say that in the last year I've read about 740 odd articles from The Guardian.
They're probably
from when they're counting from.
I think they're trying to create the opposite. So this is gamification, right? They count to the number of articles you read, and they probably show you where you rank relative to others to entice you.
Oh,
to
I haven't
more.
Seen that yet, but that'd is be that good. Not? Yeah.
So this is
no.
What
it is, it's they are asking for money. That's what it is. So they put it in. They put it at the end of pretty much every article. So if you click into the Guardian website, it'll say, "Oh, you've read this many articles this year, and did you know that we are independent? Yada yada yada. Give us some money. Be our friend." That's usually where you see, because right underneath it is you can choose how much to give, $5, $10, $20, and you just click the button and it's so very easy. And why wouldn't I after reading 740 articles?
All right. So that's a normal fundraising tactic as well.
Again,
I cannot judge them, right? All of these companies are pretty close to bankruptcy. Their model isn't really working. And so they're experimenting with everything. But again, the problem is that means they have no margin left to do the right thing.
Yeah.
They have to do whatever it takes to survive. And so,
Alex, do you think that is because people don't want to pay?
Well, I think it's obvious that people don't want to pay. Why would you pay if you can get the same thing for free?
If you can get it for free. Yeah.
So to me, that means paying is always going to be now a small minority in this market. Right?
Yeah.
You might pay if it's more in like the Spotify setup where you could have it free with ads and you can pay to eliminate the ads.
Oh, I see.
That seems to me like a reasonable. Hulu uses the same model, right? So that kind of model makes sense to me. But if you're just saying everybody must pay, your content must be really unique. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And the Guardian's content is not unique, right? They're one out of...
Oh, no, I see the same stories across all of the newspapers that I subscribe to. Yeah.
So to me, that means that's kind of a dead end. It might work for a few really large outlets, like the New York Times, perhaps. But even there, I'm not sure it has staying power. I mean, we saw that the Washington Post did really well for the first few years of switching heavily to this model. And now it's not doing really well. And Jeff Bezos seems bored and wants to sell them and buy a sports team instead. So,
Okay.
I think that tells you something about how interesting the Washington Post is as a business, right?
The New York Times and the LA Times are really the only bigger publications that I subscribe to. And I'm happy to pay for New York Times because I actually quite enjoy the journalism on New York Times. I seem to get a fresh perspective with a lot of the stuff that I'm consuming on New York Times website. So,
and also they're one of the few outlets that still has resources to do independent investigations and things like that. But I don't know how long that's going to last either, because the problem is if the entire bell curve is shifting down, right, or left, if you're a mathematician, right? Well, yes, there is a bell curve. Some of the outlets are higher up than others, but they're all shifting in the same direction anyway. So it's just a matter of time before we're in idiocracy, if you saw the movie.
Fun. That's going to be fun. So what do you think then are going to be the biggest challenges that you're facing with building and growing Otherweb? And how are you planning on overcoming those particular challenges? Like, so we as your consumers, we are obviously interested in that, you know, like, are you going to be around for the long haul? Do you have a future-proof plan?
Yeah, so I have a plan, but it's more of a model, right? And that model requires some experimentation at every step. But let's think through the model a little bit, right? Let's think of the food analogy, because information is food for the brain, right?
Yeah.
If you can think of what the food ecosystem looked like in the 50s and 60s, basically at some point food companies realized that if they add more sugar and fat and salt to stuff, then it will sell better. And people will get more addicted to it and they will eat more stuff, right? Yeah. And then at some point, and the 70s, and then more so in the 80s, people started being more mindful about what they put into their body. Now, it's still a minority. Not everybody cares, right? But at least everybody has heard about what is healthy, what is unhealthy, looking at nutrition labels, going to Whole Foods instead of Walmart, if you're using the US example, et cetera. So we think that the same kind of movement needs to be created within the information space. And in some sense, we're trying to be Whole Foods, right? As opposed to all the Walmarts that are out there right now. We want to be the place where everything that's on the shelf is at least minimally qualified to be there, right? Okay. It at least is devoid of the really bad stuff. Now, we still want to let people choose if you want slightly more conservative content or if you want slightly more liberal content. Sure, we want you to have that choice. You can disable or enable particular sources, right?
Oh, but, yes, actually, I did see that. Yes, I did see that. Yeah.
But the idea is we don't want the really obviously fake stuff in there. We don't want the elephants blowing bubbles, to use an example that we have. Right? We don't want obvious propaganda. Or even if it appears on the platform, we want to put a nutrition label on it that says known propaganda techniques detected, right? That's one of the
lines. Ah, right. Okay.
So that's
there are flags in place too then, right?
Yeah. So there are flags, but you have to switch from the summary to the nutrition label view to see the output of the models per article, essentially. That's kind of the general vision. Now, if we talk about the specific challenge, I think we're going to face, and we already are seeing it, the same challenge that a health food company faces, which is if you remove the sugar out of stuff, it might not taste as good as people are used to. So what do you replace the sugar with? You probably have to do something. right? And so our challenge is, if we remove the dopamine hit of constantly getting agitated or angry at stuff, right? Or constantly reacting emotionally to whatever that article seems to be triggering, we have to replace it with something. We cannot just remove the bad stuff, because if we remove the bad stuff, we will be left with a very high quality boring feed, right?
So yeah.
So we're trying to figure out what positive or useful emotions we can bring back. We're trying to figure out how we can create balance. So if there are some articles in your feed that create agitation or worry, we balance that out with some inspiring or hopeful messages as well, right? And that's another thing that's on the roadmap. It's probably at least a month or a month and a half away, but we want you to actually be able to customize the emotional content of your feed. Like, I want slightly less agitating things and slightly more hopeful, or vice versa. I want,
and that is something you can do as you're going through. Like, it doesn't have to be a set and forget thing. You can do that as you are using the platform.
Yeah, we can. Or we can customize it implicitly by looking at basically how you interact with things, but then let you adjust it manually, like we typically do. Because again, everybody else in the market seems to be just creating these black box algorithms that try to figure stuff out about you, and they don't even tell you what they just figured out.
We
take the opposite approach. We want you to be able to customize everything. When we create an AI model, we actually open up the source and the data set so people can look at it to make sure there's no underhanded stuff going on, right? We're trying to be as transparent as possible because we think there's so little trust left in this space that this is the only way to actually explain to people what we're doing. We also registered as a public benefit corporation for the same reason, so that we could say, as we're not just saying that we care about information quality, it's in our bylaws as the most important thing that we must do, right? So if we do something against that, our shareholders can sue us.
Right. You mentioned AI, and we talked about that at the beginning of the talk. I wanted to ask you about that. Like, have you incorporated AI to an extent with Otherweb, and how does that work? How does the user know that they are using an AI function?
They are, because it's in the description of the app and everywhere, basically. So yes, we are using it, but it's worth noting AI is essentially a set of methods, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of telling the software specifically, do this, do that, what you do with AI is you essentially create a child and then teach the child to perform a particular task. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best way to visualize it. And there's two general approaches. I know I'm oversimplifying, and every AI professional is going to
please
guts right now. But there's essentially two ways that you can teach a child how to recognize things or classify them correctly, right? You can let the child wander into the world and just observe for a very long time and learn by themselves. Or you can supervise them, and let's say you walk the street and you say, this is a dog, this is a cat, this is a dog, this is a cat. By the 100th time, they can tell the difference between a dog and a cat, right? Yeah. So those are generally called the unsupervised or the supervised learning model, right? So all of our models are supervised. We start from a data set that is annotated by humans, and then we just teach an AI model to try to emulate what the human did almost as well, right? Okay. When we talk about GPT-4, that's an unsupervised model that is trained on the entire web. So it's a child that basically just ingested everything that was ever
has all in the information. Yeah.
Which is why
I used that for the first time. It's bad.
And that's the thing. That's why I told you when we just started and you said, I didn't like some of the answers it gave me. I said, you're not supposed to. Right. Because it was trained on the entire internet. Most of the internet is junk. So what was GPT-4 trained on?
On junk.
Exactly. So every once in a while, you will ask it a question and it will give you an answer that's just complete hallucination, right? It has no basis in reality whatsoever. It's still kind of easy to detect when it does that. So things are not that bad. It's still pretty
useful,
right? Yeah. But it does hallucinate a lot.
It does, actually. I have found that with a few of the things that I have asked it very specific questions, and I've wanted, because Noah Healy mentioned that the Chat GPT passed a law bar exam. So I had very specific questions that I wanted to ask. But so the 3.5 model I found was more coherent, whereas the GPT-4 seems to want to be very verbose and wants to really impress you, which I just found incredible, because I didn't ask it to do that. But, you know, asking the exact same question, and it has given me the same answer, but ChatGPT-4 gives the answer in a very roundabout way. It almost wants to come off like, not that it is sentient, I understand that, but it almost wants to come off like it is more clever than it's, you know, than 3.5. I found that quite funny. I can quite comical.
Yeah, at the risk of oversimplifying this even further, right? The way that these kind of large models are typically trained is, first they train the giant language model, which essentially learns how to predict the next word, right? Basically the level of sentience that it has, right? But then what they do, and with GPT-4, I think they did this for almost 9 months. So GPT-4, the language model, was done in summer, but it was just released now. So what they've been doing for this entire period of time is they hired a bunch of normal people to ask it questions, and then GPT-4 would give them two different answers to the question, and the people would rank which one's better.
Oh, I see.
And so that's why it learns how to answer questions in the way that you like, based on the people that were hired. So if you see that GPT-4 tends to do it differently than GPT-3.5, then typically it was just trained by more people, or it's called reinforcement learning, right? So more people gave it feedback and reinforced a particular pattern in its behavior.
All right.
So I guess people like know-it-alls and show-offs, according to
what you said. That's what it seems like, yeah. That's exactly what it seemed like. I was just like, I thought, why would you give me an answer that's like that? Like, and it was a very simple question. It wasn't a very complex question. I didn't give it a very huge set of, you know, there were no parameters in there that I thought were complex or anything like that. And I still don't know how to talk to AI. So I've been reading quite a bit about, there are certain commands you should be giving it in order to get the answers that you require. And I still don't really understand all of that, but I just thought I'll ask exactly the same question and just have a look. You know, I have now I have the plus version, because I could never get onto it. So that was the other problem. I just could never use it. After talking about it, I wanted to experiment with it, and I couldn't use it. So that was, I thought, oh, for $20 a month, I'll just get on and pay. But I found it quite interesting. So that is what they, is that from like beta testing? Is that where that comes from?
I guess it looks a lot like beta, there is a particular term for it, and it's human feedback reinforcement.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not good with terms. There's an acronym for it. Yeah. But yeah, it's a particular process. Everybody does it the same way. So when Google comes out with Bard, and when I think Baidu just released their own as well. I don't remember what it's called. They all use the exact same process, more or less. They all ingest more or less the same data.
Yeah.
Maybe there will be some interesting differences if one of them strikes a deal with a company that has a closed data set like Quora or Reddit or Craigslist, right?
Right.
Until then, they're all training on basically the open version of the web. So
yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And yes, you are right. It does hallucinate quite a bit. Especially GPT-4, it does make things up. It made up a whole town. One of the questions that I'd posed to it was about, I'd never mentioned a suburb or anything, and they just made it. It just made it up. It just created something out of nowhere. And I thought, that's very interesting, where that, like, you know, Northlandia or something like that, where it just absolutely doesn't exist. And I could tell that it was fake. I found that quite comical, whereas 3.5 never really seemed to spit out that kind of information. So
it hallucinated quite a bit too.
It does hallucinate, but not like that, not making things up like that. At least not in my experience so far. Yeah.
No, I have a few friends that poked at it and got it to hallucinate as well. So one of my friends asked that what the meaning of his last name was. And he got an explanation that has nothing to do with reality. Right? It was like supposedly some tribe in Hungary in the Middle Ages. None of it was true. No, it hallucinated quite a bit.
That's good. Well, at least I know that it's there somewhere. As I said, I probably just haven't used it enough, but... I wanted to ask you, because we have been talking about it, what advice do you have for people who are wanting to improve their abilities to make sense of shit on the internet? You know, so how can they avoid falling prey to junk information, apart from using Otherweb? Because I really do. I strongly recommend anybody who's listening, just go and have a look at it. If you do nothing else, download it, have a look at it, because I was super impressed just with the web version, where after I'd put all of my requirements in and what it delivered to me, I was pretty much 9 out of 10 interested. Right, so how can people make sense of stuff?
Yeah, the reality is, even before the other web was created, I was already trying to solve this problem using sort of manual tools, right? So there's a few things that I would do. The first thing is really start thinking about it, because most people are just uncritically consuming information. If you just start being skeptical about what you're looking at, you will notice things that weren't there before that are telltale signs that something's off, right? Headlines not matching content, or really loud adjectives that don't quite match what is being described, right? Draconian law.
Law.
If you use draconian, there's a purpose here that is not exactly to inform, right? It's something else. Or verbs in all caps, that's, I guess, the latest one, but that's a really easy tell, right? Destroys or obliterates. Right? So all of these things are obviously bad. Now, there's a lot of articles that describe events that are almost too perfect to be true. This is something that I've seen a lot lately, even from the New York Times, et cetera. Right? Mm-hmm. There's walls are closing in. There's a bombshell. There's a smoking gun everywhere. And usually it fizzles out by tomorrow. Uh-huh. Right? But nobody reads the retraction. They happen 2 months later on page 42.
Yeah, but, in the smallest print.
Exactly. So take your time. Wait a week. You don't have to go by the breaking news of today. They're probably wrong, right? Mm. That's another thing. And then when you're trying to determine what's true and what's not, typically the things that all sides of the political aisle agree on are probably true. If something is being argued and one side claims it's true and the other one doesn't, then you know, if you always follow the same side, which is what most people do, you're probably going to know the truth about 50% of the time. Because I don't want to say that there is a symmetry, but you know, if people divided themselves 50-50, then probably their beliefs are also kind of 50% correct, right?
Yeah.
I tend to view it this way. Like, I divide the world essentially into these five categories of knowledge, you could say. Things that are obviously true, right? Earth is round, not flat. I'm pretty sure of that one, right? Yeah, things that are mainstream knowledge, most people agree on them, but there's some group of people that disagrees and they have good arguments too, right? And then there's purely argumentative stuff where it's 50-50. It's one side thinks it's that, the other side thinks it's that, no good evidence on either side, or evidence can be cherry-picked to support any position. On this one, I read it because it's entertainment, it's sports, but like thinking that this side is always right and this side is always wrong is like thinking that, you know, the Lakers are always the best basketball team and whoever is playing against them sucks, right? That's the same level of conviction, right? And then you have categories 4 and 5, which I would say are the contrarian stuff. The minority believes this and has good arguments, but they are still in the minority. There's a mainstream position that disagrees, right? And then there's the batshit crazy stupid stuff, right? Earth is flat level thing, right?
Which so seems to be coming out more, that we seem to be bombarded by that kind of stuff though more than the mainstream, which everybody agrees on.
So now that you have these five categories in mind, I'm going to say a few interesting observations that maybe you haven't noticed until now, maybe you have. The first observation is the category that nobody writes about typically because it's impossible to monetize is the first one. Mm-hmm. Right, the things that are obviously true.
Yeah.
If you print a book about it, nobody will buy it. If you write an article about it, it goes on page 42, not on page one, right?
Right.
Because things that are obviously correct and true are really hard to use to get people's attention. And so this is why it doesn't matter what topic you pick, let's say dieting, right? It's really hard to find a diet book that actually tells you what the current state of the knowledge and science on dieting is. It's much easier to find some crazy argumentative position like eat only meat or don't eat meat at all, right? It's all these 51% positions or 49% positions. That's what sells the most, right?
Yeah.
Or you can write the completely batshit crazy stuff like cabbage soup and nothing else, and you will lose 400 pounds in the next 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
That might sell as well, right?
Well, someone's going to click on that though, aren't they? Yeah. That's what someone's going to click on rather than this is the way to do it properly and the right way and healthy way. Of course, someone's going to click on the cabbage soup diet.
But if I write an article titled Vegetables Are Good For You, who's going to click on that? Right.
Yeah.
So that's one interesting observation. The other observation is that all the ideas that are in category one right now, that are the truth to the best of our knowledge, used to be category four at some point. They were always contrarian first, right? And so the contrarian category is the most interesting one because the vast majority of contrarian ideas are false,
right?
But some of them are brilliant. And we don't know which ones. And so when I watched this entire debate in the US about censorship versus hate speech or something like that, right? I think it misses the forest for the trees because the idea is if you cancel everything contrarian, you're not going to have any new brilliant ideas. You're going to cancel all of them. But if you look at every contrarian idea and you think that that's God's honest truth, then you're going to be crazy most of the time because most of it is just not true or logical, right? And so you have to be really careful with this category. You have to allow it and you have to not quite believe it, right? And both sides seem to be missing that part, that is where the action really is happening. That's the most interesting category, but we have to treat it appropriately.
So there is there a way to get the things that are, say, in category one, where you said no one's going to click on it, no one's going to read it, but is there a way to get it from that category into somewhere that people will without fooling people?
So I'll tell you what we're trying to do, but that's an experiment, you could say. I don't know if you've stumbled upon this feature yet or not, but you can highlight any phrase in an article that you're reading. Right-click on it if you're on the web or if you're on mobile.
Actually, yes, I have seen that. Yeah.
And you can search for it in research studies or on Wikipedia. That's typically category one, right? That's a way to get to it. Typically, if you want to search for the latest state of the science on vegetable consumption, something triggered you to go there. So our assumption is, well, maybe you highlighted something in a news article or in a commentary article. And that gets you into content that's category one, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So there, but people have to do that for themselves.
They do, right?
There's no way to get those stories, say, from category one, that this is good for you, this is what you really should be doing, into in front of them unless they're actually looking for it.
Maybe you can be really sneaky about it, but the reality is if you tell people things that are obviously true, then most people will stop paying attention because they probably already know it, right?
And if you use things that are untrue to get their attention to tell them things that are true, you've lost their trust.
So I guess what you should do, or now we're kind of going into the category of the person who creates the content, I think, right? Because as an aggregator of content, and we try to aggregate all sorts of content, news, commentary, podcasts, research studies, et cetera, right? But we still rely on somebody to create all of it. And I think that the majority of content that is being created is already not category one. There is not enough incentive to create things that are obviously true. So somebody has to sponsor it, essentially government grant or research foundation or a company doing basic research. It needs to be somebody, because otherwise, why would you write an article about vegetables being good for you, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to monetize it. So we rely on the world of articles out there, or the world of content out there. Most of it is not going to be this kind of basic, the current state of knowledge type article. It's going to have something tricky about it.
Yeah.
Maybe it will still be mainstream, right? But it needs to have some trick to attract people's attention, or to warrant being written about.
To keep their attention, I guess.
Yeah. We try to choose the best out of what's available, and then give people a way to dive deeper into, well, and actually, here's the context of what we really know about this topic.
Yeah. And that's an important point that I just want to reiterate, that Otherweb is not the creator of this content. Otherweb is compiling the content for your consumption into one easy place.
And I would even say we're not the ones compiling. The users are compiling. We're giving users the tools to kind of order.
You're just giving the tool.
Yeah. There's one place where we are compiling. That's the newsletter, where we actually have an editor that spends about an hour and 15 minutes per day selecting 9 articles out of everything that his app feed shows him, and to send that out as an email, right? So that's the one human touch that we have in the system, right? Yeah. Everything else has to be AI-based or an algorithm.
Ah, right. Okay. And that's based on the user's input.
Yep.
Before we wrap it up, I just wanted to talk about other technology companies and policymakers, and how do they avoid falling prey to this junk information? They're not all using Otherweb, so because obviously policymakers are they're prone to looking at fake information. We can see that by some of the things going on in the US right now.
Prone to generating it more than they are.
They generate a lot of it. Yeah, they do. Yeah. So what sort of steps do you think that policymakers and other technologies should be taking to address the junk?
So policymakers typically have their own staff, right? I don't even think that, well, with few exceptions of people that we know watch Fox News in the US religiously, right? For the most part, people who are elected into office have staffers that create binders of information for them on a topic. And so it's those staffers that we really need to teach to use the best tools to research what is true and what isn't, whether or not they use the Otherweb, right? Maybe they should go to allsides.com, or they should read realclearpolitics.com or groundtruth.com, right? There's quite a few now services that try to make things better. I think our way is the one that I found to be the most convenient, but it's not the only one, right? Mm-hmm. So I do recommend anybody whose job depends on being right, invest a little bit more effort than even the average person into being well-informed. But I think even the average person needs to be well-informed, because why would you want to go through life believing nonsense? Right. Your actions are going to be based on that nonsense, right? So I think people should try to get informed. It is complicated right now. We're trying to make it easier, but I think the desire should be there in almost everybody.
They have to want to. That's what I was thinking, Alex. They have to want to have good information. They have to want to find the information that is useful for them, that isn't leading them down that dark little right-wing nut job path.
But okay, let me use an even more extreme example than that, right? I was born in the Soviet Union, right? Mm-hmm. Which had state-controlled journalism as a profession, right? And so I actually have these vivid memories of my parents waking up at 4 a.m., grabbing their radio, locking themselves in the bathroom so nobody would hear, and listening to Voice of America to get some semblance of real information from outside the Soviet Union.
Right.
That was the only way. And we know Voice of America is not perfect, right? It is American propaganda. That was the purpose of creating it, but it was substantially better than what was available, right? And so my parents were substantially more informed when the Soviet Union was about to break apart. We knew what's going on. Most of the people we talked to still believe the propaganda about everything being just fine and just wait 2 weeks and we're still making giant steps on the way to communism, right? But yeah. My parents knew this is about to blow up, right? And specifically, we were in one of the republics that was about to blow up. So we had to either adjust or leave, and we left, basically, as soon as they allowed us. But that's an example of being informed is useful to making real life and death decisions occasionally, right? People who are in Ukraine right now, I'm pretty sure that you know, their life depends on good information. In fact, I have an employee who left Ukraine on the night from February 23rd to February 24th.
Wow.
So several hours before the border closed for men trying to leave.
Right? Yeah, yeah. That's well, that was example. A big thing too.
Yeah. But that's an example
because they
of,
stopped people.
Yeah, being informed can be useful to you in your life.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Absolutely. So curate good information and do it by visiting other web. Now, so it's on the game. It's on the Google App Store. It's on the Apple Shop Store. What do they call App Store?
App Store Apple, and Google
App
Play.
App Store and Google and Play.
Yeah.
But there is also a web version, and that is otherweb.com.
Yes.
Yep. So people can sign up. Do they have to sign up to use it?
Right now.
Is that how it works?
I guess it's kind of path dependent, but we're really trying to get people to sign up because then we can remember their settings and let them customize stuff. Right. Because the reality is if you don't sign up, then none of these features work. So I actually think
you have to do it every time then.
It becomes kind of odd, right? It still works. You still get the nice bullet point summaries instead of having to read the entire article. You still get the nutrition labels, but you don't get proper customization of your feed. And so even if there's a way to get into the site without signing up, I highly recommend you sign up. It will be better.
Yeah. Please do sign up. Please do sign up. As I said, I did, and I looked at, well, now you've given me some tips. So I'll need to change my preferences, but I'll keep going there. I'm making it a habit. I set reminders for myself to go and do certain things, and it's all about creating that brain, that memory, you know, the muscle memory, going and doing that and looking at those things. So
by the way, I'd be really curious to get your feedback or comments on that, because that's one thing that we don't have yet. Like, we don't have any push notifications or anything like that, but if you develop a habit yourself using some reminder, please let me know what it is, because I'd like to try to automate that for everyone.
I just do it with my calendar. So I do it with my not my calendar. So I use a MacBook, and it is an app on the MacBook, which is Reminders. And because I use an Apple Watch and I use an Apple phone and an Apple computer, when I set a reminder on the computer, it pushes out to all of my devices. So it doesn't matter where I am, I'll get the reminder to do these things. And it may seem a little bit outrageous, but I do have reminders that remind me to feed the dog. You know, I have reminders that I have to go and check websites and do certain things. You know, if there's a thing that I'm supposed to be doing daily, we get so bogged down and we get so busy with other stuff that sometimes you don't think about it for 2 or 3 days. And especially when there's something important, it's good to have that reminder. So you go, oh yeah, I need to do that today. Even if I don't do it today, I've been reminded and I'm thinking about it. So when it's in front of you, particularly with me, when it's in front of me, I'm thinking about it. So I always try to put something in front of myself to remember. Oh, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's still something that I think we need to figure out, because I saw at some point how addicted my wife was to Duolingo, and she never missed a day.
Oh, yeah.
And so they've done a great job of getting people to just do it once a day. Which is roughly what we're asking, right? 10 minutes once a day. You know what's going on in the world. We don't want to keep you for an hour and a half, right? But we do think that once a day is a reasonable frequency for consuming news. So
with Duolingo, isn't that based on a reward system?
And push notification. So you will get a notification saying, you know, you have a 17-day streak.
A streak, yes, that's right. Yeah, plays, yeah. Right?
So maybe we need to do something like this, but I'm open to ideas. Maybe news.
I'd be in on that. I would, you could guarantee that I'd be there every day, because even if I don't read anything, just going there and checking in on the site, I feel I've achieved what I needed to achieve.
There are other connections that happen to people naturally. So I'm curious, maybe we'll at some point people. Oh, so that's worth mentioning. We're experimenting with audio as a way to consume the news instead of reading. And so maybe people will actually start reading this, for lack of a better word, while they are driving in the morning.
Because that's a good idea too.
You can basically just get all the summaries read to you by a fairly natural voice. So that's one thing, right? Everybody I know who uses Instagram uses it on the toilet. So if we can connect ourselves to driving, for example, which is another daily activity, that is slightly more appealing than the toilet to us, then that's probably where we should go.
And to me, I don't take my phone to the toilet with me, but I do listen in the car. I listen to news and I listen to podcasts, and I do get a lot of information while I'm driving. It's a bit weird, actually, because it's like an unconscious listening. So actually, I'm absorbing more information while I'm driving than if I was sitting here just listening with the ear pods in or something like that.
Yeah, I mostly do audiobooks when I'm driving or exercising.
Yeah,
or
I like flying. Audiobooks. I love the audiobooks. I've got way too many in my list at the moment.
Don't we
well,
all?
Listen, thank you very much for joining us. We've hit just over an hour, so I'm conscious of the fact that I've kept you for a while, but it's been enjoyable talking to you. And again, I do encourage listeners who are out there who I like to think, from the feedback that we've had from listeners of this show, that they're pretty smart. Like the people who are listening like the information that is shared with them. So they seem to be people who might benefit greatly from using Otherweb. So otherweb.com, it's on the Google Play Store, on the App Store. And like Alex said, he's always updating the app first. So
it's at least a Get few weeks it. Ahead.
It's a few weeks ahead. Get onto that. Yeah, I'm going to have to put it on my phone. I'll do that right after we finish.
All right.
It's been enjoyable. Alex, thank you so much for joining us on Utterly Unscripted. And as I watch Otherweb grow, I will be inviting you back, because I will be interested to hear what's happening and what new features are coming.
In terms of that, I'm sorry, but if I may have one more shameless plug.
Please do.
We are currently fundraising on WeFunder. So if you want us to grow faster, that is a great way to help and to become an owner in the company and have some return on investment, preferably. So,
well, tell us some more about that then quickly.
Yes, wefunder.com/otherweb is where we are raising right now, instead of going to venture capitalists, because we want our users to own the company ultimately. And not
what a great idea. So is that, how does that work then? They go to the funder, and then based on their pledge, they receive some kind of...
So essentially, the typical way in which angels and early stage investors invest in companies in the US is called a safe note, which is an agreement that converts into equity in the next round. And so WeFunder processes the paperwork for that as well. But what they also do is they pool all the investors into one special purpose vehicle that gets issued one safe note. And that means only one of the investors has to do paperwork. Everybody else just gets everything processed for them, right? And becomes essentially like a follow investor in that round. But it's called a community round, because it's there to replace a seed or a pre-seed round.
It works
roughly the same way. The terms are roughly the same. The only benefit for everyone is, for us, it's the ability to actually have people who like and use the app as our part owner, right? Mm-hmm. And it allows us to keep a tight-knit community of the super users, the people who really care, right?
That's a
good way to kind of organize everyone into one group, because we know if they're investing, then they probably really, really care. And then for the users, well, if they believe in the product enough to use it, maybe they believe that it will also have a return one day. So
why not share
that possibility with them?
Which is a great way to get people Well, that is also another way to get people to use it regularly, is they have a financial stake somewhere. You know, they have a piece of the pie, really. You know, rather than going anywhere else, you would go there first. Of course you would.
Yeah. Look after your personally stuff. Invested on several companies, and we funded just based on I use this product. Right. And if I use this product, then I've already made the choice that I think it's good, right? Now, of course, I look at their financials. I make sure that it's a reasonable product in itself. By the way, you mentioned before that you are not a big fan of Zencastr. Zencastr is actually fundraising on WeFund right now, so you're probably not going to give them
any money. I got their emails, actually, and they did, because I was one of their what did they call us? There was a name that they gave us, like the pioneers kind of thing. Pioneer group.
I'll give you a little secret. They probably used that word when they wrote to everybody in their email list.
There's some really cool email to me, but I like the platform. It just wasn't good for my needs, so that was the only thing. It just was a bit clunky, and this one works better, and maybe they're doing some fundraising. But there you go. So WeFunder, is that what is it? WeFunder.
Yeah.
.com.
/otherweb.
/otherweb. So, okay. Yeah. I'll put that as a link anyway, so it'll be there in the show notes. Awesome.
All the best companies lately have been going through that. Even my bank.
Yeah.
The bank that we use for OtherWeb's funds. They also raised the funds to kind of scale to this level on WeFunder itself.
That's interesting, especially when you look at what's been happening with some of the banks around the world recently.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be.
We don't use Silicon Valley Bank, if that's the next question.
Yeah. No, I wasn't going to add. No, I wasn't.
I was never a fan personally, so it's not a big surprise to me what happened. But
yeah, I don't think it was a big surprise to many people, just the people who obviously don't read anything.
Yep.
So people who are looking in and relying on junk information by the sound of it. So
yep.
Nice one. Thank you very much, Alex Fink, for joining us. And again, everybody, I've put some links in the show notes. Feel free to visit WeFunder, otherweb.com. And feel free to give some feedback. I'm sure Alex will be looking forward to hearing from you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jesse. And I really look forward to any feedback I can get. All we can do is based on what people tell us to do.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's how you know you're doing a good job. And that's how I've done things here too, listening to people's feedback. So awesome. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. Until next time, friends, take care.